This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Paris, Rue Aumontierville, off the Avenue des Ternes, which the number 43 bus would bring me down from outside my grandmother's little house and into the heart of where I thought I wanted to live forever, the world's most beautiful city. I don't think the Rue Aumontierville was then, or is now, anything very special, nor the area around it. I should go back and check, not simply rely on the huge and wonderful aerial map that hangs on my wall, and see if it's all as it was when Guillaume Apollinaire devoted a line in his great epic poem of Paris to that anonymous little pocket of the 17th arrondissement. I should check Auteuil as well, and the other places mentioned in the poem, Zone. It was written just a year before the outbreak of the First World War, and it's the one Apollinaire decided to place at the beginning of his first major collection, which came out in 1913, and is still as fresh and startling now as it was a century ago. If I'd known it, Zone, in the days I was riding on the 43, I'd have stepped down from the rear platform of the bus, so ancient that Apollinaire himself might even have taken it, and I'd have made a pilgrimage along the Rue Aumontierville. But I hadn't even heard the name Apollinaire then. That would only happen years later, when, as a student, I made the chance discovery of that 1913 collection of poems in an English bookshop. It was the title caught my eye. Alcool. Simple. Abrupt. A good example of less is more. The cover was unexciting in the extreme. A few bald words against a plain background of liverish yellow. Nevertheless, I bought the book there and then. That title, plus a quick peek inside, did it. I was trying to broaden the horizons limited for me by university dons. Now, decades later, I'm glad I did buy it. That edition, I mean, with its jaundiced cover and that fierce word alcool smacked down on it like a glass on the counter of a Paris brasserie. Or rather, like one glass followed by another, because the word is alcool with an S, plural, as if each poem was a new intoxication. I still have the book, battered and tattered, minus its back cover, but happily not the front. I'm going to stick my neck out and say that Zone is not just the best poem Apollinaire wrote, and their strong competition, but that it's the great poem of early modernism. A decade before the oft-quoted date of 1922, the year of the wasteland and Ulysses, Apollinaire has given us in this long poem of wandering and dislocation a sketch map of the modern. In French, the word Zone has several meanings. The one appropriate to Apollinaire's poem is Outskirts of Paris. The poem starts somewhere in the middle of the city and ends, indeed, on the outskirts in Auteuil. Auteuil is and was a select area. It's in the poem because that's where Apollinaire was living at the time, and like so much of what he wrote, the poem has an autobiographical basis. But the noun Zone suggests something more threatening than genteel Auteuil. It's more a hinterland, a risky place, a bit of a no-go area, or to put it another way, a wasteland. Did Eliot know Apollinaire's work? Well, he knew and admired a good deal of French poetry, of course. To my ear, there are pre-echoes of the wasteland in Zone, not just in the title. There's the resemblance of structure. There's the geographical and historical range, the power of two vast and modern cities, each with its great river, the drift of the desolated spirit, the mixture of high and low life and of high and low art, and there's the technique of visual and auditory collage. Lots, in fact. But Apollinaire's default position, here and even in the war poetry he was to write 2 years later from the Western Front, is brightness. Unlike Eliot, whose Thames runs slow and sombre, deep with history, Zone opens onto a vista of a smiling River Seine, whose many bridges are like a flock of sheep heading for thoroughly modern pastures, led by that outrageous metal shepherdess of the industrial age, the Eiffel Tower. And all around are emblems of progress, a lovely newly constructed street gleaming in the sun, motorized buses lowing like cattle, aeroplanes that descend from the heavens like fixed-wing birds. A bang-up-to-date Jesus Christ is there as well, holder of the world high-altitude record. But woven into the texture are some hints of the malaise of being modern. Les directeurs, les ouvriers et les belles sténodactylographes du lundi matin au samedi soir, quatre fois par jour y passent. Le matin, par trois fois, la sirène y gémit. Une cloche rageuse y aboie vers minuit. Four times a day, Monday to Saturday, workers, typists and company directors trudge back and forth to their place of work, rather like Eliot's. Factory sirens wail three times a morning, a sound that would come to signify the horror of war. And an angry bell barks like a dog. Then Zone becomes a slow account of decline. The protagonist is Apollinaire himself, though he stays unnamed. He's turned into a universal figure by the frequent and unsettling switches from je, I, to tu, you, informal, to vous, you, formal and plural. As he wanders the streets and bars, searching his own history and memories, more and more he loses physical and mental direction on an epic journey of one day and one night, followed by dawn, which sees him tramping back to Auteuil to find sleep among his South Pacific and African fetishes and masks. Zoon is brought to a violent end by one of the most memorable images in poetry, to my mind. A blurted farewell, adieu, adieu, and then the blade comes down in an almost untranslatable line, soleil coupé. The rising sun is death, a disc of blood, truncated like a headless neck on the guillotine. Such, then, is the first poem in the first French book of modernist poetry. In part only, though, because Alcool is not exclusively about the modern. It's a mixed bag. One influential critic of the time, Georges Duhamel, called it a boutique de brocanteur. A vivid description. Duhamel had in mind something akin to a high street charity shop. He meant that you'd find in the book a lot of poems of average quality, some that were downright bad, but also a few absolute gems. It's true, Apollinaire was indiscriminate. He included too many pieces he'd written long since, at around the turn of the century, when he was at the start of his career, hardly out of his teens. He was born in 1880, after all, meaning that his formative years were spent under the aegis of a misty and mystic symbolism. Many of his poems are medieval in substance and tone, full of references to the most obscure figures of history or legend, and they seem to have nothing in common with the brilliant modernism of poems such as Zoon and The Emigrant of Lander Road, The Voyager or Vendémiaire. And some of his poems are frankly far too long. Alcool sums up rather neatly, I was going to say the paradox of Apollinaire, but I really mean the protean nature of his personality and of his output. Simultaneously, he cultivated the past and worshipped the future. He was possessed by a deep sense of tradition, but he wanted to create, this is a deliberate oxymoron, a new tradition. He's the writer who did more than anyone else to get the new Cubist painters on the map. He befriended them all in their legendary building in Montmartre, known as the Bateau Lavoir. In March of that prolific year, 1913, Apollinaire's study of 10 Cubist painters was published, a short book but influential. And more than any other poet I know, Apollinaire was able to adapt to poetry the techniques of Cubism, notably simultanism. the use of multiple perspectives to render an object. When, just 1 month after the Cubist painters, Alcol appeared in the bookshops, readers were able to appreciate, or decry according to their tastes, how the poet had matched the painters. The thing is that there's no punctuation whatsoever in any poem. Nothing. There had been, but at the very last moment, Apollinaire took the decision to suppress it. It's not entirely clear why. It could have been a mix-up at the printers, but I like to think it was because he saw that this was how to set syntax free. Now, you couldn't be sure where one phrase ended and the next began. Meaning became meanings, plural and simultaneous. Apollinaire's third major publication of that Annus Mirabilis of 1913 appeared in June. It was a short and fierce diatribe entitled The Futurist Anti-Tradition. Marinetti's ideas were making splashy waves at the time. Apollinaire's short three pages explode with rage. They berate the icons of the past. Montaigne, Baudelaire, Beethoven, Wagner, Walt Whitman, etc., etc. And they call for an alternative canon made up of newcomers such as Marinetti, of course, Stravinsky, Macorlan, Kandinsky, Jouve, Max Jacob. The manifesto spits venom at critics, professors, and museums. Not to mention the sacred sites of Bayreuth, Florence, and Oxford. Not even Shakespeare, Tolstoy, Goethe, or Aeschylus are spared. Apollinaire demands that language be used in new ways. Conventional syntax, punctuation and adjectives must go. So too, in poetry, must the measured line, the tidy stanza. Imperatives he himself didn't always obey, by the way. In the end, though, the futurist anti-tradition is not much more than street protest. What do we want? Free syntax. When do we want it? Now! But it does reveal Apollinaire's serious concerns. He continued to the end to believe in a new kind of art which would synthesize all genre and forms and sing with the new lyricism the modern age deserved, and to which he gave the gnomic name Orphism. But would Apollinaire have come anywhere near realizing his dream of a synthesis of the arts? Would he still feel optimistic about humankind now, were he alive? I'd like to think in the affirmative. I'm quite sure that his work would have taken yet more exciting new directions. He'd surely have involved himself in the emergent cinema, for example. Maybe the theatre too. He did, in fact, write a couple of avant-garde plays. One, The Breasts of Tiresias, still works well today, as demonstrated by the terrific English production in the late 1980s at the Crucible in Sheffield. Its prologue is an important little manifesto of the modern as well. It's there, incidentally, that Apollinaire coined the word surrealism. Wireless telegraphy also excited him. He'd have loved radio, he'd have loved television, he'd have loved working in the sort of studio I'm in now. In fact, he was recorded reading three of his poems. One, at least, the exquisite lyric Le Pont Mirabeau, has been remastered on vinyl. The living, present voice of Guillaume Apollinaire emerging from the hisses and scratches of a century ago is one of my treasured possessions. 2 days before the armistice in 1918, and in the same week as Wilfred Owen, Apollinaire died of Spanish influenza. He'd been weakened by a serious shrapnel wound sustained 2 years earlier on the Western Front. He was only 38. And here's my little fantasy. He comes to life, walks out of the Père Lachaise cemetery, and strolls down to the Seine to meet me. From the de Quiricot portrait in the Centre Pompidou, I instantly recognise him, with his barrel chest and Roman Emperor's head. To celebrate the centenary of Alcol, I buy him a drink in the Café Fleur, near his flat, at number 202 on the Boulevard Saint-Germain. And then together, we set out to see what he'll make of Paris now.